The most difficult part of our job is to be, to trust yourself. That's, being on the podium in front of musicians is terrifying.
Erstklassisch mit Mischke, der musikalische Podcast des Hamburger Abendblatts.
Schönen guten Tag zu einer neuen Folge. Ich habe heute einen Gast aus Frankreich da, über den die New York Times gerade geschrieben hat. Er sei possibly the most interesting conductor in the world, also der vielleicht interessanteste Dirigent, den wir gerade so haben. Er ist 41 in Versailles aufgewachsen, war zuerst im Knabenchor, hat dann als Counter gearbeitet und studiert. Dann ist er zum Dirigieren gewechselt, hat ein Ensemble gegründet 2006, das Ensemble Pygmalion, und hat in diesem Sommer bei den Salzburger Festspielen mit der Said unglaublich abgeräumt, macht jede Menge Repertoire vom Barock bis zu Brahms. Jetzt ist er gerade hier in Hamburg, weil er heute Abend in der Elbphilharmonie, wir sitzen hier im Hotel daneben, Brahms auch dirigiert und hat über sich selber gesagt, Musiker zu sein bedeutet, ein Musikstück zu begehren. Bonjour, also Raphael Pichon.
Hallo, grüezi.
Und übrigens, falls Sie jetzt schon neugierig geworden sind, wer schon alles in diesem Podcast war, das können Sie nachhören auf abendblatt.de und bei allen Podcast-Apps unter Erstklassisch mit Mischke. Bewertung von 5 Sternen aufwärts finden wir toll, dann machen wir weiter. Aber jetzt erstmal zu den Fragen an Monsieur Pichon. Ich habe über Sie gelesen, dass Sie Linkshänder sind und dass das Dirigieren mit links ein ganz großes Problem war zu Beginn Ihrer Karriere, weil man gesagt hat, mit links darf man nicht Dirigieren studieren.
No, it's part of a... Sadly, the press reported that many times, but it's really nothing important. It's just that... It's just perhaps something which changed a lot since 20 years. It's true that when I tried to enter the conservatory in Paris, I was a bit out of the box. My I was a singer. I was coming really from a choral world, and that's true that I'm left-handed.
Me too.
And that's true also that perhaps I was a bit naive, but I didn't want to use any stick, and I was not able to produce a really traditional technique, and it's still for me kind of a regret that I never learned really this. But I mean, when I had to face all the steps to try to enter the classes at the conservatory, we said to me, please, if you would like to do anything in this world, if you would like to embrace any career and we would like to conduct an orchestra, please come back right-handed.
Okay.
And I think that was part of, it was not the only reason, of course, but it was an even stronger invitation for me to start in a totally different way and to start my own project and to start my own group and to start a group where the voice and the instrument will be at the same level of importance with this intuition of fusion of a choir and an orchestra. I think that's part of the essence of our story.
And now you're conducting with the right hand.
And no, I'm conducting with both hands. Okay. I don't know.
Because I thought it's complicated to start and to actually officially not having a technique and getting into the business, nevertheless, is complicated. But everybody is used to what you're doing now.
Yeah, you're right. Even if I'm... It's even for young conductors trying to learn... The most difficult part of this job is how to learn, because you really learn something important front of a group, front of an orchestra or a choir. So that's true that I have some regrets, speaking about technique, I have some regrets. But at the same time, it's also... I also have the sensation that sometimes... technique could be more important than music, and And I have no regrets about these 20 past years with the birth of a group on the human side, with a dedication, with an involvement, with a generosity, with a repertoire, with an identity, with a kind of signature of how we would like to present our repertoire, our music, what kind of engagement, what kind of researchers, what kind of, you know, I think it's so much more important.
Mm-hmm. Sie haben Ihr Ensemble Pygmalion 2006 gegründet mit 21 Jahren und noch während dem Studium. So while you were still studying, you founded your ensemble. And I thought, this is quite a crazy idea because it makes life really complicated to start an ensemble at that age. And I wondered, how long did it take for you to not be afraid about the consequences? How many years did it take for you to get out of the debt, to be really working, to be sure this is what we have to do, this really works, we can survive, we can make music, and we don't have to be afraid at the end of each month about the bills?
I think it will never happen. But that's part of the adventure. Now, you know, I'm not really coming from an artist family. My father is a big fan of classical guitar. My mother was playing a bit of piano. But I mean, not at all, there is no really artist in the family. And I had this absolutely so important opportunity for me to enter a Knabenchor, a boys' choir, for many totally crazy reasons. And this changed my life. The shock was huge. And these 12 or 14 years in this boys' choir changed also everything, because this experience really gave me an idea that music is not out of a human adventure. And when I was 18, 19, I was so afraid that this adventure will finish. Because when you're 23, 24, it's finished, and it's only dedicated for boys and teenagers and young adults. So the most important motivation for me was, let's create the conditions to continue to do music in the same way. And that's why I was not afraid of something. I was like a junkie front of the only solution to be happy, or to continue with what was so deep in me. So, and also, you know, in France, we are really lucky people, because in France is a land of projects. Since the 70s, 60s, since Boulez, and since the Second World War, it's a land of projects, speaking about all these contemporary music groups who were born in France in the 60s, 70s, and then step by step also early music groups, of course, Jean-Claude Malgoire, and then William Christie and Les Arts Florissants, and then the next generations with Marc Minkowski, Christophe Rousset, Emmanuel Haim, and so many others. So it felt for me like also an invitation that there is perhaps a bit of room and space for a new adventure. But with a tiny difference, which was, of course, in France, the choral music was not so important. And we were a lot dedicated on instrumental groups. And I really wanted I was also really aware about the English tradition, about the Dutch tradition with Philippe Herberg and so many others, but also the German traditions. And I wanted that we reconnect voices and instruments. Mm.
Wenn Sie so verliebt waren in singing, so you were really in love with singing. How hard was it to change to conducting? Are you missing singing on stage now, or is it just the continuation of your work but without singing?
I don't think I'm missing it. I had the chance to sing until I was like something 25, 26. And during more or less 10 years, I had the opportunity to sing with many different groups, many different repertoires. I did a lot of new repertoire of contemporary music and creation, also a lot of early music, polyphony from the Middle Age, Renaissance, but also Baroque. I had also the opportunity to sing a bit on stage for opera projects and to meet also amazing musicians. So it was also a fantastic way to be on the other side of the mirror and to learn so many things in contact with all these musicians. So no regrets. And exactly as you said, I think it was for 5-7 years, I was conducting and singing. And now there is no regrets. It's the, for me, it's the continuation, because what I feel the most important, I'm still a musician. Hmm.
In der Branche, in der Sie unterwegs sind, in these early music ensembles, they're all specialists. And if you're a good specialist, you're really, your market value is high. Is it like in football or in soccer or in baseball or basketball or whatever? Are people trying to buy a good specialist from one ensemble to get him into another one? Gibt es da eine Art von Transfer? Is it like football players being sold because someone's coming to your ensemble Pygmalion and there's this great flute player and it's another ensemble and is telling him, ah, come to us, you can earn more here. The green is really nice over on this side of the lawn. Come to us. Is it like this? Are people, is there someone coming, trying to get musicians out of your orchestra because they're so good that they want this violin player or this trumpet player for another ensemble?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm not thinking like this. I think one more time I will again say how we need to protect and even to defend and to fight to continue to have a very dynamic European space for musicians. I'm speaking first about France, where there is this really specific system, which is this freelance system. The government is helping musicians with a very, very specific system to help them to compense this freelance activity. And freelance for me means a lot. It means that in Pygmalion, everyone is freelance. It's a pool of more or less 200 musicians. And in this pool of 200 musicians, there is a very important question of engagement and of fidelity coming from me and from them. But at the same time, I think that one of the key for such an activity is people doing many different things. They could teach, they could work and perform in different groups, they could work and perform in many different repertoires, they could do like Middle Age music or contemporary music. And this is the key, because it's a unique richness. It also means that when they join Pygmalion, it's their choice to be there and to be 105% absolutely, totally dedicated to this project. Mm. And it's also a joy to be together. And it's also a joy to see again these people. So this activity where there is no routine, where project after project, it's something you choose. Like I choose the repertoire, like I choose the way we will try to present this project. I think it's really a key of this freelance world, and it's something so important, so rich, so special, and so important for the quality, for the creativity, for the dedication of everyone. I think it's really something we need to pay attention to preserve, because in what I could testimony, what I could say, it's that the world around us since the start of Pygmalion and today is totally different. I'm not sure it would be possible for a young musician to try to create more or less the same kind of group, the same of kind of activity today, which is more than a shame. It's what will be the future for the next generation? I'm really worried about this. Mm.
Aber ist es dann nicht unglaublich schwer, mit einem, wenn Sie als Gastdirigent mit einem Orchester arbeiten, wo es eine Gewerkschaft gibt, wo es einen Feierabend gibt, wo man nicht sagt, wir beuten uns alle selbst aus? Isn't it really complicated and hard for you to work with an orchestra where there's a union, where people are saying, oh, it's Friday, 5 o'clock, we're done, weekend, and where there's a completely different spirit to freelance orchestra, where everybody is working until everything is really finished. And if you come to a regular orchestra with, they have times where they work, they have times where they don't work, they work in a certain amount of hours a day, and that's it. Afterwards, someone from the union comes to you and says, no, we have to stop, this is end of rehearsal. I guess this is complicated, and it's even more complicated because you, coming from this specialist area, from historically informed repertoire, and meeting an orchestra that's playing Brahms and Bruckner and Mahler all day long, and you are going to explain them, you've done everything wrong with Bach in the last 50 years. I'm going to tell you how it's going to be right.
So, first, I would never tell any orchestra anything that they're wrong, because
okay, maybe you tell you know them you're what I mean. Not completely no, right.
Of course, but because we are all wrong. Mm-hmm. And it's good news, we are all wrong. Mm. Because it means that for everyone there is something to look after. And this quest and this necessity to find, to invent a way to let explode the messages of all these works in the face of the audience and to share them is the most important. I'm more and more convinced that this era of specialization is more or less over. Since the 70s, it was so important that these first generations like Malgoire, Harnoncourt, William Christie, they had to face a very difficult reality to press the button stop or resume, pause, and take the time to face our patrimony in a totally different way. And they also, it was a moment where we needed people able to be specialists of one language, one grammar, one vocabulary, one moment of the history, Italian music of the Seicento or the French music of Louis XIV, or I don't know. And they more or less woke up atrophied parts of the souls of these patrimonies and revealed to us perhaps hidden part and a hidden power of all these musics. But the world changed a lot since 40, 50 years. And and the challenges are different, and the audiences are different. And I think also that for modern orchestras, for permanent orchestras, it's really terrible news that they had to quit part of their repertoire. Because it's so important for a modern orchestra to sometimes perform Bach, a lot of Mozart symphonies, to understand Berg, a Berg concerto, or a Brahms symphony. If you would like to understand a Brahms symphony, it's so great to be to face Schütz music or Buxtehude music or Gabrieli music. I don't know. But I really think that now it's really important that this orchestras could really reconnect with the global, all the repertoire. I think it's really important. And at the same time, like my musicians, I told you that for my musicians, I think it's really important that parts for in different moments of the year, they could face someone different like me, as me, that they could face a different repertoire. And so also for me, sometimes I feel that it's important to just step out a bit of Pygmalion and to face different realities, different cultures, different approaches. It's really rich for me. Hmm. Even if, of course, as you said, it's to face different philosophy. But it's also for me to face something really important. It's to face a tradition. Hmm. And if with this kind of orchestras we are able to find a good project, the good repertoire, sometimes it could create really great moments and great meetings and great... I really think something is important in the kind of more dialogue, more bridges in between this, let's say, early music world and this permanent modern world. I think it's part of our future, even if we need to really protect and preserve all this constellation, all these galaxies of really microscopic worlds, all these past generations revealed to us what is the right pitch, temperament, instruments, colors, tools for the music of Francesco Cavalli. It's nothing like Cesti. To perform a Handel opera is nothing like a Purcell opera. It asks for different approaches, like to make sure that we don't erase and we don't come back to a kind of globalization of all these galaxies of micro worlds. Because each moment, each composer or each part of Germany in the 17th century, it's so different in between the south and the north or the east and the west. But this, the older generations since the 70s made an amazing work to reveal all this finesse to all of us. And we need to preserve that, but at the same time, we need to accept to face the world around us, which is so different.
Hm. Heute Abend dirigieren Sie Brahms. Der ist ungefähr 200 Jahre weg von Bach, noch weiter weg von Rameau. Bis wohin würden Sie sich vorwagen? Würden Sie jemals sagen, ich dirigiere jetzt, keine Ahnung, Schönberg, Boulez, Nono? Wo ist für Sie die Grenze, ab der Sie sagen, bis hierhin kann ich, danach kann ich nicht mehr?
For sure. For me, there is no borders of time. The repertoire is not a chronological approach. I don't believe at all. For me, if on Monday you conduct a Monteverdi opera, no, let's say you conduct a Schütz or Pretorius program, and then the next day Gabrieli program, and then the next day Mendelssohn Oratorio, and then Brahms Deutsches Requiem. It's so much more clever than to conduct a Monteverdi opera and the next day a motet of Lully. The repertoire is so much more about culture, traditions, legacy, heritage, the way, like an infusion, the way the traditions and culture are infusing a culture, a folk, a people. And this, it means for me that we did, for instance, last June, we did an opera of Martinu. We will do a big project, Stravinsky project, in 2 years. I don't think, for me, there is some repertoire I don't feel close, and some repertoire I don't feel able to conduct. So I will not do this, but it could be early music, it could be 20th century music. We just commissioned our first opera. We will create, it's a new piece from a Argentinian, French Argentinian composer, a satiric comic piece for period instruments, but from all times. So the limits are, I'm interested with all good music.
Okay. Ich muss mal ein bisschen was erklären. Ich habe das Programm hier angesehen, was Sie neulich in New York in der Carnegie Hall dirigiert haben. Da ist, ich bin ganz schwindlig geworden. Ich erkläre es mal kurz. Es gab Beethoven 9. Es fing aber an mit dem geistlichen Marsch aus König Stephan. Dann gab es Texte von Walt Whitman. Dann gab es den persischen Nachtgesang von Silcher über einen Teil der 7. Sinfonie. Dann gab es Leonore Prohaska von Beethoven mit Texten von Maya Angelou, Caged Bird. Der Tenor hat vorne an der Bühne gesungen. Und dann haben Amateurchöre am Ende die Ode von der Freude mitgesungen. Die waren im Publikum verteilt und haben auf einmal mitgesungen. What an amazing program. What a wild and crazy idea. You could have such an easy life. Just going on stage, doing, I don't know, Vivaldi, Four Seasons, Bach, Brandenburg Concertos, up and down, all six of them, and just play what people want to hear. But you do this amazing and terrifying work of combining pieces like in this program, where you mix stuff in an adventurous way. Isn't it really hard to do all the time, always inventing things, always digging around, immer danach zu graben, welches Stück passt mit welchem zusammen, wie ein Puzzle, immer wieder was zusammenzustecken und zu sagen, nee, falsches Teil, ich fange von vorne an. That's so much more work than you could be doing.
Music is able to change the world. Music changed my life. Music changed the lives of so many musicians I know. We are part of this amazing and huge community of musicians, testimonies of how music could change the world, because when it's changing the life personally and collectively of so many people, the power of music is absolutely unique. It's really banal to say this, but if we are looking at classical music world today, we need to accept that there is a bit of danger speaking about this. Because this danger is just that classical music world would become in the next decades definitely a museum. Why? Because we are now in the middle of an ocean of music. There is music everywhere.
But do you enjoy putting these pieces together, trying whether they work or not? Is this the most fun part of your work, sitting in front of a library and lots of music and thinking, okay, Beethoven 9 is boring in its own, I have to find something else?
No, Beethoven 9 is not boring. Beethoven 9 is one of the most, if I don't know who said this, but of course perhaps Beethoven 9 could be one of the proofs we could send to the other parts of the universe to show what could be humanity. But the problem is that Beethoven 9th, there is too many moments where we are just listening Beethoven 9th, but we are not really listening again what is Beethoven 9th, what is the message of Beethoven 9th, what are the words of Beethoven 9th, why this fusion of music and poetry. And the idea at Carnegie Hall, I was invited to conduct Beethoven 9th at Carnegie Hall in New York in these days. And I was not able to accept that we are not trying, let's try to invent a kind of a prologue where, with a combination of poetry and music, because that's the choice of Beethoven, we will try to create a kind of tension and that we will put front of the audience again some of the most important poems of their own American history. Perhaps to suddenly listen to Beethoven 9 differently and to renew with its urgency, the urgency of the conquest of joy, the conquest of brotherhood. For me, it's my own way just to be not an engaged artist, just a conscious artist of what is the real power of the music. Because there is a danger to become a museum or to become just a source of entertainment. But music, it's not our genius, like Brahms, Beethoven, so many others, is not entertainment. It's so much more. And I think we need, there is many, 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 many ways. It could be there is many, many fields to explore to try to renew with this. But one is, for me, the way you combine pieces together, the way the journey, the arc, the tension, the receipt, the storytelling, the parable, the to reach out of the words, but to try to create words.
Wie lange braucht es denn, wie viel Zeit braucht es, bis so ein Programmkonzept steht? So what was the longest time you needed for creating such a concept program? Is this done in 2 days? Is there 18 different projects in your cupboard where you're working on all the time and yes. You think this is not it? It's not ready, it's not finished, it's not perfect. How long, what was the longest time you needed for such a project to be complete?
Yes, I have many different projects in my mind, and sometimes one is sleeping for months, and then depends. But for instance, I really wanted to create a lost opera of Rameau 2 years ago in Aix-en-Provence, Samson. Rameau, the censorship said to Rameau that this Samson was not able to be created at the time, and the score is lost, but we still have the libretto, a kind of a libretto. And it was a libretto from Voltaire, so a very corrosive, really political libretto. And also Voltaire hated the entertainment of the tragédie lyrique at that time. And he really wanted to renew opera as a possibility of learning something. And this Samson story is a very terrible story, of course, the first kamikaze of the history in Gaza. And so I spent, perhaps 2 years to reconstruct this piece. So there is this kind of big projects asking for a lot of time. But I don't know, for instance, yesterday night I did one new program combining Beethoven with Honegger and with Stravinsky and with Charles Ives. And sometimes it could be like finally you have an intuition and blah, blah, blah. So it depends, but it's not the most important part of my life, because the most important for me is, of course, to be on stage. But that's, of course, the second part of my artistic life I love the most.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Zum Ende mal drei kurze Fragen, die können Sie ganz schnell beantworten. So three quick questions.
Sure.
On a scale from 1 to 10, 1 is really low and 10 is the highest. How great is your ambition as a musician?
What kind of ambition?
To be perfect, to be important, to be liked, I don't know. The ambition as being a musician.
Oh, I think, you know, the most difficult part of our job is to trust yourself. That's being on the podium in front of musicians is terrifying. Before to go to New York 2 weeks ago, was on the edge to cancel because I was not enough self-confident. And it's strange because I'm not sure I would like to be 100% self-confident, because this electricity, this fear, is also perhaps something really important. So let's say, I think perhaps the most difficult part is to accept this fragility.
Mm-hmm. How did you get yourself out of this situation and finally get yourself into the plane and flying to New York after all?
Beethoven 9.
That's a good reason. What is your biggest musical guilty pleasure listening to? ABBA, I don't know. Is there anything you're really ashamed of and still can't stop doing it?
It's strange to say this, but I'm listening less and less music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're playing all the time. That's okay.
That's part of the story of being a conductor or musician on the road all the time. No, that's true. I think I'm listening less and less music, which is, I think, a shame, because I feel sometimes like I have two kids, and I feel more and more disconnected of some of the. No, that's not true, because no, that I'm connected with a bit of French new singers and but
you just missed Zao de Zagazan, her concert here.
Yes, I'm a big fan of Zao.
Amazing, amazing.
I'm a big fan of Zao. I was to the concert. Last time I seen a concert out of classical music was Zao 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
In Paris.
Okay, I saw her here.
Okay.
Final question. Wenn Sie Bach treffen könnten, was würden Sie unbedingt von ihm wissen wollen? Außer wo er die Musik zu seiner Markus-Passion versteckt hat. So if you had the chance to talk to Johann Sebastian Bach, what would be your question for him, a part of where the heck did you put the music of Markus-Passion?
To choose one question, I'm not sure I would like to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy like this. I think to perform all his works is already perhaps the most life-changing experience we could have. It's a direct connection, access to the soul of humanity. And I think this chance is even more important than to meet him in person.
Okay. We're done. You have a concert to conduct in a few hours. Wir sind durch, vielen Dank. Es ist jetzt ein paar Stunden vor dem Konzert hier in der Elbphilharmonie, deswegen hören wir jetzt auf. Wenn Sie das hier hören, ist das Konzert schon vorbei. Das tut mir jetzt sehr leid für Sie, aber es gibt diverse Alben mit Raphael Pichon und mit dem Ensemble Pygmalion. Gerade das jüngste ist mit Brahms, dem deutschen Requiem. Wir passen zu dem Konzert heute. Und schauen Sie mal, wann er das nächste Mal hier womöglich in Hamburg auftaucht. Ich würde hingehen, wenn ich Sie wäre. Ich gehe heute Abend erstmal in dieses Konzert. Vielen Dank, Raphael Pichon.
Vielen Dank.
Merci beaucoup und
mit plaisir.
All the best for the concert.
Danke vielmals.
Ein Podcast von Funke.
Weitere Podcasts vom Hamburger Abendblatt finden Sie in unserer Abendblatt-Podcast-App und auf abendblatt.de/podcast.